Everyone always says your money should work as hard as you do. But the thing is, with Eagle Bank's highly competitive deposit interest rates on money market accounts and CDs, your money doesn't even need to work that hard. From personal to business, Eagle Bank's flexible deposit terms help you hit financial goals in the short and long term. Stop by one of the DMV area locations or visit us online at eaglebankcorp.com to learn more. Member FDIC.
Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Ford Lincoln. Let's ride together.
Hey guys, what's up? This is Josh Norman.
This is Joe Gibbs.
You listen to Redskins Talk.
What up, everybody? Redskins Talk Podcast. JP Finley here with Pete and Mitch. Pete is desperately trying to dap up Mitch, and Mitch just won't even look at him.
Stonewalled.
Pretty great. I enjoyed that, Mitchell.
He wasn't getting it.
I didn't enjoy it.
What happened that you, why were you trying, and why was he denying?
I just love working with you guys, and sometimes I want to give a fist pump because I'm excited to be here, and Mitch does not share that feeling.
Pete just got overly excited for a minute and just got to, you know, bring
you
him back.
Got to try to calm the young fella down. As always, brought to you by the good folks, Orsman Automotive of Virginia. We ride with them, and you should do the same thing. All right, so for today's pod, we recorded a really great interview with Kedrick Golston, played for the Redskins for 11 seasons. Really good dude, massively strong human. If people have never seen Ked, it's hard to, like, picture how a guy can be that big and muscular.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense, but...
Also an all-around incredible dude. If you remember during the players' lockout, the Redskins got together and were working out on their own to George Mason, and him and his wife organized the workouts, and then they would brought lunch for the players and the media, and we'd all sit around and
what was the eat. Food like?
It was, I believe we had sandwiches? Chipotle once, and we had like Panera the other time.
I'll do.
But his wife was doing real estate, and she her agency sponsored the workouts, and it was good for everyone all around. Ked's a great dude.
Definitely a good dude.
6'4", 300 pounds. And think about this. Played 11 years in the NFL, was a 6th-round pick.
Right.
You don't get that kind of longevity, especially at D-line. I mean, that's a
same,
physical
and
position.
The same team throughout, too. Just a good career.
Right. And he told me once, he's like, we were talking golf. He's like, man, I can crush the ball. I just don't always know where it's going to go. Can you imagine that dude if he connects
the sound
flush?
That it would make?
I mean, well, listening to B-Mitch crush a golf ball is pretty impressive, but Ked's got 5 inches on B-Mitch.
Yeah, and probably 100 pounds.
Yeah, at least 80. 50,
yeah.
Okay, sorry.
60 pounds or so.
I don't know how much B-Mitch weighs.
I would say 80.
I mean, going back, it was the Jason Campbell golf tournament, then it was Brian Arakpo's, and then Brian handed over to, I believe, Kerrigan. You go to that thing, and you see these guys who are just superior athletes.
Right.
Some of them can't swing a golf club worth hell, and it's great because you just want to laugh because
it's something you have over them.
But there are other dudes that just crush the hell out of the ball,
yeah.
and you're jealous.
Yeah.
All right, so we got an interview with Ked. Anything, January 17th, William Jeffries Tavern. You going to be there, Mitch?
I'm going to be there.
Tim Meek is flying in. How about that?
That's all you need to know
incredible.
About this event.
Tim Meek is such a gangster. I wonder if Brian Hall is going to come up from Wilmington.
I'll tell you what,
Brian, if you're listening, which I know you likely are, I love the hoodie you got me from Loggerheads. Love it.
The 30-minute Q&A for the pod is going to be great and informative. The off-the-record Q&A is going to be incredible. I can't wait to hear what questions you guys are going
to
have.
You know, like how comedians, like, you have to, like, check your cell phone at the door? Like, either the mics all get turned off or something. Like, we have to know.
We need to cover our asses.
Whoa, Pete.
Cover our butts.
Take it easy, Pete.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Pete must want to get to lunch.
It must be lunchtime.
Must be lunchtime for Pete. All right, should we go to Ked?
Let's go to Ked.
Let's go to Ked.
All right, on Friday, we're going to have our playoff picks.
We need
you
to do some
ready?
Sort of, like, prize or winner.
Oh, does everybody know about me and Pete's year-long golf bet?
Yeah.
I got Rory McIlroy. Pete has Ricky Fowler.
Ricky.
Year-long money list. Not wins,
is there
money
an injury?
List.
Is there an injury caveat here?
I don't know. Major injury? Sure.
Yeah. Rory, I think, is going to win more, but Ricky seems a little more consistent.
I think Ricky plays in a lot more tournaments than Rory. Am I wrong?
Rory's committed to the U.S. Tour.
Oh. Is that what sparked this whole thing?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what sparked it. It was just me and Pete talking S, I believe.
Yeah. Just as we are wont to do.
Pete just loves Ricky Fowler more than Deb.
Don't go that far.
So in last season, Rory finished at 4.6, 15th place. Ricky finished at 4.4.
Wow.
17th
place. This is gonna be
so this
good.
Is juicy, dude.
This is super good.
Juicy. Yeah, this is good. All right. Time for Kedrick Olsen. Go check out Oarsman Chantilly Kia. Go get a car from them. They got good stuff. Billy and Chantilly will take care of you. We always ride with the good folks at Oarsman Automotive of Virginia. Here comes Ked.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman Fairfax Toyota. Let's ride together.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees? Check. Loaner cars and free car washes? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman Kia of Alexandria. Let's ride together.
Number 13, Roethlisberger, pressured, sacked. Edrick Golston comes through and pulls him down.
We are very, very happy to bring on Kedrick Golston to talk a little football. Big Ked, played what, 11 years with the Redskins?
11. Got drafted in 2006 by Coach Gibbs and finished it out in 16. So.
That's crazy, dude. You saw a lot
that's
of
like
things
11
at Redskins
years,
Park.
But like dog years, that's like 50 years in the NFL.
Hey, you know, like Coach Gibbs used to say, man, I'm a core Redskin. So, you
for
know,
sure.
11 years there, played for with some had some great teammates, some good coaches, and to
and
be
some
perfectly
bad
honest, a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah. So, what was it like going from Joe Gibbs to Jim Zorn?
It was, see, for me, well, I'll say this. It wasn't much. The only difference that I really had was when Coach Zorn came on, Greg Williams left, and my defensive line coach, Greg Blosch, actually became the coordinator. So defense was pretty much business as usual. And but to be perfectly honest with you, I know this probably isn't popular in this area. I didn't have a problem with Jim Zorn. We were 6-2. And obviously, we finished out the season 8-8. And the thing that I appreciated about Zorn was he wasn't your typical kind of hard-nosed football coach. He was kind of a maybe quirky's the wrong word, but he was himself, and he was always himself. You know what I mean? And so it was never he tried to be one way one day and then show you something different the next day. And so to me, it was like, hey, he's a little different. He obviously played, so he understands it. But it's a results-driven business, and you know, now he's kind of the people like to make him the laughing stock. But I actually thought he was a good football coach.
Quirky is definitely the perfect word for Jim Zorn. The stories that he used to tell off mic when you're just talking to him, I can't even imagine what he was like in meeting rooms with you guys or whatever. But we used to hear some wild hunting stories. He picked up a fox off the side of the road that had been roadkill and turned it into his rug for the opening of his house. Like just crazy, crazy stuff.
Yeah, no, he was kind of, you know, he was big into mountain biking and hiking and kayaking and canoeing. So that was kind of his, stories he would tell. And so for a lot of guys, you know, they could be cool stories, but you couldn't really relate. But that being said, like I said before, he was himself. And, you know, I could appreciate that.
Well, and I didn't mean to get us off topic. I wanted to talk to you about about the current Redskins defensive situation. And sorry, Jim Zorn sidetracked us there for a minute. One time I met Zorn and he asked me, please don't throw tomatoes at me. I was like, okay.
He was my favorite coach that the Redskins have had.
Well, I mean, not to go too far back, but see what people don't understand, he actually went back to the George Allen days with the hip hip hoorays.
Yeah.
Right. So when we were on that winning streak, we actually got that back going. So, you know, it kind of comes full circle. And then, you know, Bruce Allen comes in. So, you know, it's a lot of tie-ins here.
I mean, like you said, they were 6-2. Things were rolling. Everyone was happy. That was a great hire the Redskins made, and then the bottom kind of fell out. But those first eight games were wild and fun.
Sounds a lot like this year, 6-2 and 6-3.
Well, you know, under Jim Zorn, we were still running the 4-3 defense to kind of get it back on
now
track.
Now, there you go. That is a professional right there.
We have to bring a guest on to get us on track.
So you said it. So you played in both the 4-3 with Greg Williams, Greg Blosch, and then the Shanahans get to town, and everything switches over to the 3-4. Can you give – so a lot of our listeners, a lot of Redskins fans, are adamant that the team needs to go back to the 4-3 and that it's a big part of kind of the defensive struggles of this team. Can you – how about let's start like kind of on the football 101 level. What are the advantages between the two setups? Like what's the advantage to the 4-3 and then the 3-4?
So I'll take you. So I think people are so – let's just go back to like kind of like the basic 3-4. So when Coach Shanahan came here and Jim Haslett was our coordinator, we took – I'm not going to say old school, but kind of that Pittsburgh Steelers 3-4 that people remember with Casey Hampton and Brett Kiesel and all those. And so that defense was essentially the nose guard was right over the center, and you had your two defensive ends, which were – you know, there was like me and Adam Carriker and Stephen Bowen and Jarvis Jenkins, Chris Baker, those type body types. And we were head up the offensive tackles. And then you had your Ryan Kerrigan's, the outside linebacker, Brian Arakpo, you know, those types. So that defense just in itself, that was kind of the alignment. But the difference was that you were more reading and reacting. So I only had one gap as a defensive end, which was the B gap, but I was still letting the offensive lineman get the first move and reacting to him because the basis of the 3-4, that layout with, you know, the head up the nose guard, head up the center, and then your defensive ends head up the tackles is to essentially eat up blocks so that your linebackers, Perry Riley, I mean, even London, when London was here, Keenan Robinson, you want your linebackers running free and you're able to clog up gaps with your body, but also the offensive lineman's body. So ideally, as a defensive end in that scheme, you want to invite double teams so that your linebacker is running free, if that makes sense.
So with their past two first-round picks being defensive tackles / interior-ish, in a 4-3, it feels like they would play interior with Daron Payne and John Allen. How do you think guys like that would adjust to being O-linemen attractions as opposed to being the guys that are making the plays?
But here's where it's different.
Or kind of when did that shift even, yeah.
Well, so even when you look at when Coach Barry became the coordinator, we were still a 3-4 in body type, meaning that the 3-4, you have essentially three defensive tackle body types on the field, whereas in the 4-3, you only have two. You would have your two interior like a nickel. Essentially, nickel is 4-3, where Ryan Kerrigan puts his hand down, Preston Smith puts his hand down, and then you have Payne and Allen in the middle, or Payne and Ioannidis, or so on and so forth. So the 3-4 allows you to have that bigger body in the game. That's the way we played the 3-4, but when Coach Barry came, you were still in the 3-4 personnel with three bigs on the field, so you might have me at the nose guard, Chris Baker at the 5 technique, and who was the other? Jason Hatcher at the 3 technique. So with that, it was still kind of like an under front, similar to a 4-3, except you had another big guy, another defensive tackle body type playing your 5 technique versus like a Ryan Kerrigan or a Preston Smith for smaller body type. We were still attacking. It was just the initial alignment was different, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. So what do you think the Skins should be doing now, kind of looking ahead to 2019 and even beyond? And, you know, let's start there because I have some follow-ups.
Okay, so this is what I would say. I would say if you really want to be realistic, they're 3-4 in a base system, but they've started the game out. I can think of just maybe 5 or 6 games that just based off the offensive personnel where they would come out in a 4-3 defense.
In their nickel package.
In their nickel package is where now they have 2 defensive tackles, Preston and Ryan have their hand down in the dirt in a 4-3 look. And so to me, to be perfectly honest with you, if you are thinking pass, I like to have my 3-4 personnel out there because as a defensive lineman, you have better angles to attack the blocks, not only to eat up the blocks, but to make plays. And so I don't think that, you know, just talking about the defenses, I don't think that the defensive line production was necessarily an issue this year.
Sure.
You know, especially talking about, I mean, I think
it was the lone highlight of the defensive season.
Exactly. And so back when, and that just speaks to one, the type of players that they have, two, the coaching and then putting them in position to make plays. But to have, what did Allen finish with 8 sacks? I think Ioannidis was right there and Payne had 5. Yep. I mean, those are Pro Bowl like numbers from your interior linemen. And also you're talking about young players that still have tons of room to grow.
So we've looked a lot at the D-line, but when you look at linebackers like Ryan Kerrigan and Preston Smith and Ryan Anderson and guys who will be back next year, do you think they fit in the 3-4 when they have to kind of stand up and cover? Do you think the Redskins kind of need to adjust the outside linebackers that they target? Or since they kind of switch them between the 4-3 and the 3-4, that Kerrigan and Smith and Anderson can kind of work in their roles as currently constructed?
I think that obviously Ryan is Mr. Consistent. He's going to give you his 10 to 12 sacks a year. He played in a 4-3 in college. Now, we're a long way removed away from that. But I think if you would ask him, you know, he likes having his hand in the dirt. But he gets that opportunity probably 70-75% of the time based off of personnel that the offense gives him. He's strong enough to put his hand in the dirt and play a 4-3, but I also think that he probably likes the versatility that the 3-4 gives him. Now, Preston is a whole nother monster. You're talking about a guy when he was coming out of Mississippi State that would line up in passing situations as a defensive tackle on the nose guard. You know, and Preston is 6'4", 6'5", probably 260, could probably easily be a 285. Pound defensive lineman. I think it just speaks to the skill set that they've drafted and having super athletic guys that can play multiple positions. Ryan obviously is a heck of a football player, is a guy that you can see coming on that flashes at times. And I think the more he plays, the more comfortable he'll get. I just don't like in today's NFL, you need to have that versatility. You know, you can't – there's no way with all the things that offenses throw at you that you can kind of be one-dimensional. You need to keep as much speed as you can on the field. And when I say speed, I'm not talking about small guys. But, right. Yeah, you could throw a 290-pound defensive end out there, but is he going to be able to peel off on the back when we're running a zero blitz? Is he going to be able to drop in that zone coverage and really be a legitimate threat there so to hold a quarterback from throwing the ball? To me, I kind of sum it up like this, right? 3-4, 4-3, there's nuances to both of them. I actually played with Greg Williams and Greg Blige. We were 4-3, but it was more of a 3-4 principle as far as defense aligning, staying square, hitting blocks, allowing your linebackers to run free, hence why London Fletcher, as the Hall of Fame type player that he is, I think he would tell you that. Well, I will tell you this: if an offensive lineman got up on London, you were going to hear about it because he wanted to run free and make tackles, and that's why he was as successful as he was, is because the defensive line took pride in holding those guys off for him so he could go out and make tackles. But it kind of goes down to this: is everybody still only has one gap, whether you're 3-4 or 4-3, and no matter what defense you're in, you still got to tackle, right?
Yep. Sure.
And that's what I think, you know, it's one thing to give up a 5-yard play or a 10-yard play, but when you miss a tackle and that 10-yard play turns into a 30-yard play, well, that's not necessarily defensive fault. And I think if you're being honest, like I said before, they're in both defenses anyway.
Right.
I mean, and that's kind of where it's not like we're in a 3-4 personnel and they're out there with a spread four receivers. No, they rotate. You know, they switch to a 3-4. They might even have – I can remember times when I played where we would have one defensive tackle in the game and we would have, you know, three or four defensive end types, you know, your Ryan Kerrigan, your Preston Smiths, those type of body types in there. Just trying to attack matchups. And that's really what the game is about. We understand attacking matchups from the offensive, but the same thing goes into defensive of trying to put your players in the best situation to make plays. And that might be taking one of your bigs out and putting a smaller guy in or vice versa. I can think, remember times when we would play a lot of teams that would come out in a heavy look and they would take one of the small guys out, you know, smaller defensive ends, and they would add a defensive tackle in there just to match personnel. So there are nuances, but at the same token, if we're being honest, we are kind of playing both defenses.
We saw, you know, early on the Redskins seemed to be pretty stout against the run with a couple big games against Zeke and Christian McCaffrey and company, Saquon holding them all under 50 yards. What do you think kind of changed later in the year? And do you think going to 4-3 more consistently, because you're not in nickel, going to be in nickel as much in the early down first down, second down. So if they went to a 4-3 early on in those downs, do you think that will kind of help them be more stout against the run?
I would say that.
And is it fair to say that you don't play nickel as much early in down?
Not necessarily. Well, I think, you know, whenever you hear nickel, people automatically think pass. So I think from the standpoint of if they go in saying, hey, when we're in nickel personnel, we're thinking they're going to pass the football. Well, from a defensive tackle's mindset, you're thinking more up the field. I'm not trying to waste my time worrying about the offensive lineman.
Right.
I'm trying to get up the field to go sack the quarterback. But there's also some calls that I'm sure that Coach Tom Sula and Mineski say, hey, when I call this, you know, if we're in a too high safety, I need you to kind of slow down a little bit because, you know, we only have a 7-man box versus an 8-man box where you can be a little more loose in what you're doing. So I think just growing in the scheme, but when I look at it, I think that the rushing woe started against the Atlanta Falcons, to be perfectly honest with you. Up until then, like you said, they had shut down some premier backs in this league. And I think what Atlanta did was kind of had an excellent game plan based off of a little bit of smoke and mirrors, and they had the personnel. You know, if Julio Jones or Calvin Ridley is in a rocket motion, you know, that's going to hold your linebacker. You know what I mean? They do things to stress you out because they have the type of personnel that, you know what, you can't just put all your focus on Julio Jones because they have Sanu who's capable of beating you. Calvin Ridley has been a great addition, made some big plays for them. And so they did a good job of, I thought, manipulating the rules of the defensive line. You know, our defensive line is taught that when they get double teamed to drop a knee so that they don't get pushed back. And once that offensive lineman leaves, then they're able to pop back up in their gap to stop the run. But if you go back and you look at the Atlanta Falcons game, Atlanta made pretty much their runs and their pass look exactly the same way. But if you figure you got Julio Jones or Calvin Ridley running across the formation in a rocket motion and then the ball is snapped, that holds that backside linebacker a little bit. Does he have the ball? Doesn't he have the ball? Well, bam. There goes the seam right there that the running back needs. And so it's not necessarily that the defensive line was bad or the scheme was bad. It's just that they did a good job of manipulating rules to, instead of tackling that guy in a phone booth, now he has to try to tackle him, talking about the linebacker, in open space, which ball carriers in this league are really good. And if you give them a lot of space, more times than not, they're going to make you miss.
I tell you what, man. I think I just got a football PhD.
Yeah.
Ked, you're the best. Here's my last question. Is the discussion 3-4, 4-3, is it kind of much ado about nothing because they play basically the 4-3 so often in the nickel personnel?
I think so. I think like anything, right, the more tools you have, and they've obviously shown that they can do both at a high level, I think when you lose and things kind of unravel down the stretch like they did, people look for reasons to try to make wholesale changes when really, without being in the building and watching the tape with the coaches and knowing exactly what they're coaching, these are little things that added up to, you know, losing just from the defensive standpoint or giving up yards and allowing teams to score points. Just little things that, you know, you would look at it and say, oh, that guy had a good game. But if everybody, if one person makes one mistake in a game, you would say that's a pretty good game, but that's 11 mistakes. You know, and 11 mistakes will get you beat. And so I think that instead of focusing on, from a player standpoint, what you can't change, figure out how to do what you're already doing a little bit better, because it is proven. It is proven that it does work, because nobody was saying anything about switching defenses when they were 5-2 and,
right,
you know, a top five defense. And so you got the same coaches, you got the same players. Yeah, you're going to have, you know, off, you know, the game, the rules are set up for offense, right?
You think so they'll make a coaching change? You think Minuski could be in trouble?
I don't think so, because I think when you're able to, there's a difference between explaining something and giving an excuse. And if I can look at this and I can say, hey, I put this guy in position to make a play, or, hey, I put this guy in this situation in practice, and I can say, hey, this is how he responded in practice, this is how he responded in the game. Now, if he was responding wrong in practice and I allow that to continue, then there's an issue with coaching. But it's kind of hand in hand, right? Sometimes players need to bail out coaches. Sometimes coaches need to bail out players. But what you got to have is everybody on the same page and buying into what the coach is selling. There are no perfect plays if you don't execute the fundamentals of the play. And so, you know, if I have something that I know works, why am I going to switch it up, right? Because who is going to come in here that I know is going to be head and shoulders better?
That's a good point.
That's one thing. You know, and secondly, you know, last year you could kind of explain, or 2 years ago, you could kind of explain why the defense started getting beat up, right? You lost essentially the strength of your defense when Allen got hurt, and then Ioannidis broke his hand and kind of never quite was the same. Mason ended up getting hurt, right? And so the defense was healthy this year, right? But Dunbar missed the majority of the season, and once he got hurt, he was quite not really the same. You know,
yeah,
Dunbar
was a big
part.
They tried to bring him back. It was not good.
Yeah, he was a big part and was playing at a high level. I mean, really was playing at a high level. And you brought in, you know, you was kind of cornerback by committee after that in a bunch of young guys. And you got to give young guys room to grow, right? And, you know, they're probably going to be some good players that come out of that. But they had their struggles. And offenses are going to test you, right? If they know, hey, that's a late-round rookie in there, they're going to test him. They're going to see, you know, and see if he can hold up against it. And, you know, those guys went out there and they competed and they battled. But it's a reason why you need players, especially young players, to come in and develop. Whether you're a late-round draft pick or an early-round draft pick, there's still a development process that has to take place. And so hopefully I would expect a big jump from those young secondary players having a full year to go through it, kind of knowing week in and week out what to expect, how to prepare. And so to kind of answer your question, I really think it's a non-issue. And I think it's something that as a player, you can't focus on 4-3 or 3-4. You have to focus on your job in those different calls. That's like, you know, that's like saying, you know, an offense to say, well, you know, why do we need to get in shotgun, you know, versus being under center? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You need that in your tool belt to go out and win a football.
This will be it, because we've taken up way too much of your time. Did you get to watch the wild card games?
Yeah.
Who was your best team and who was your worst team of wild card weekend?
Man, well, you got it. The Texans are my worst team.
All right,
you know,
that's what I said.
That's a good football team.
That's crazy they fell apart like that. Like,
and Watson's a heck of a player, but you got to kind of take your hat off to what the Colts have done, man, to roll off, what, 10 of the last 11?
Yep.
People had them dead in the water. Andrew Luck looks like the first pick of the draft, like he did in years past. And their defense is, you know, I can't name anybody on their defense, but they got an all-pro rookie linebacker.
That kid's good,
everybody's man. Everybody's bought in, and they're playing at a high level, and you can't name really too many people on their team. You know, they got an offensive line that used to be, you know, one of the weaker units in the NFL that is now considered one of the better units. And they just went out there and played at a high level. Now, I think that, you know, it's hard to say, because I can't believe that the Texans, you know, that they were a good football team. And it's just to go in there and get dominated like they did. And I hate to say this, but the Eagles scare me. And the reason they scare me is that they're kind of hitting their stride at the right time. And they do whatever they need to do to win a football game. You know, and the play that sticks out in my mind, it was, you know, kind of third and 12, and they have Zach Ertz dead to right, you know, with a 4 or 5 yard gain, and he kind of just blindly spins two spins and gets 14 yards to keep a drive going to end up, you know, extending the drive for the go-ahead touchdown. And so that's a team that obviously believes in Nick Foles. They won it last year with him, and they're kind of peaking at the right time, if that makes sense.
Hell yeah. It's scary.
All right. As a Georgia guy, did the Bulldogs get screwed not making the playoffs?
Well, I'll say this. Do I believe that Georgia was one of the four best teams in the country? Yes, I do. Do I believe they got screwed? No, because they had an opportunity to get in if they would have beat Alabama, and they didn't beat Alabama. So nobody wanted to see Georgia-Alabama 3.0.
That I would have watched said, that gladly.
Well, but I think the team that honestly got screwed, well, and I will say that I think the fact that Oklahoma and Notre Dame played as poorly as they did, and everybody on social media from all the other news channels and things of that was talking about how Georgia would have played. I think that affected us going into the Sugar Bowl and playing Texas, because the guys, they got ready to play at about halfway through the second quarter, but they were not ready to play that football game when they started. The team that I really thought that should have got in that didn't, I thought Ohio State should have got in over Oklahoma. And the reason why is that Oklahoma's defense just was not championship quality.
No way,
and
man.
To me, you cannot expect to go into the Alabamas, the Clemsons, you know, the Georgias, those type of environments and play the type of defense that they play, because it's good for what they do and they score a bunch of points, but it's not championship quality. And so I thought Ohio State was one of the I thought Ohio State was one of the hottest teams in the country, and should have was more deserving, honestly, than Oklahoma.
Do you think UGA got shook when Bevo started charging at the Bulldog?
So I'm actually, you know, I got it on. I know it's coming on, and I just so happened to sit down, and I see it happen, and I was like, "Oh, that's not good." I said, "Well, there's still hope. If we win the game, you won't hear anything about it. But if we lose, it was like that from the beginning." And the sad part about that is that they're going to be showing that from here until kingdom comes, because that's how college football is. So that's going to be a highlight on or a meme or anything. And our beloved Ugga, which was the thing that I'm so sad about, is that the reason they call that dog a bulldog is because it was bred to go into the ring and go between a bull's legs and grab him by the private parts and get him to calm down.
Damn, history right there. That'll get him to calm down, no doubt.
So that's why they have the short nose, right? The short nose, wide neck, and narrow rear end, so that when the bull gets to swinging around, they can just hold on for dear life.
Well, oh, my God.
We can obviously see that they have bred all of that out of that dog.
Right. That dog just wants to chill.
The dog lives a great life. They fly. He lives in Savannah. They fly him in on private jets to the games.
Why doesn't he live in Athens? Why does he live in Savannah?
His caretakers live in Savannah.
That's a good life for a dog.
You know what? He's not trying to grab on the bull's private parts, so that's good.
It was a running joke when we were in school, but it's even more true now, that dog probably has the best job, better than Kirby Smart, in college football. He does.
Until Bevo got at him, everything was going well for Ugga.
Yeah, and so it was a bad look. I can't defend that. I knew when I saw it. I just said it's not a good look.
But, dude, I'll also say this. Did you see – so Bevo is clearly agitated, and they try to get him to calm down by having him face the wall of the Superdome.
Right.
And I'm no bull expert, right? But you got to – that thing weighs 5,000 pounds or something.
You are an expert in bull.
They got a 5,000-pound bull facing the wall in a stadium with 70,000 people screaming and flashing lights and loud music. Like, maybe take the bull outside.
Yeah.
See, you're reading too much into this. See, this was all planned, right? That bull has been trained to stay calm. That bull is in arenas, you know, around the country,
sure.
You know, week in and week out. I'm going to tell you what they did. They got a stuffed animal Ugga. They tormented that bull all week. So at the first
good conspiracy
moment, what would have stopped that bull from continuing the charge, right? So that bull was trained to do that. And
so
I'm
you think they
that.
Did this on purpose? This was all a setup?
Absolutely, because, listen, what's the, with all those people around, because one lady almost got gored. I mean, yeah. she missed it by the, you know, this, you know,
yeah.
the skin on her teeth. The bull could still see the dog. What made the bull, first of all, immediately charge, right, with all those people around, and then immediately stop? Because when you watch it, the handler dropped the rope, and he was kind of smiling. So to me, they trained that bull to do
this
it, and then they
intense.
Gave the bull a treat.
I saw
like a Netflix special.
I saw a handler grab on the horns for dear life and hope he didn't get dragged.
But it is interesting.
You're looking at the wrong thing, JC. You're looking at the wrong. That's all distraction. That was what they trained that bull. That was the you know, that was the safe word. Grab the horn, and calm down.
So we've got private parts and safe words. All right,
oh,
let's
man.
Go.
This is way better than 3-4-4-3.
Yeah, we should have gone. We should have started with Bevo and Uga. Ken, thank you so much for joining us, dude. I appreciate all your time.
Learned a lot of things.
Yeah, no, I mean the real football conversation was great, but the last 5 minutes are going to have me laughing for a week.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the making of the mascot killer. That's what I'm on it now. I'm on it now.
You're the man.
Narrated Ken. By Kedrick Golston.
When are we going to see you back in studio, man? Tell AJ to call you.
You let me know, man. I'm you know, I always have a great time with you all, and you know, good stuff. So let's chop it up soon.
Sounds good, man. Thank you very much. And once springtime comes, we need a fourth for golf, so we'll get out there.
Perfect.
Pizza member at Needwood.
Yeah.
I'm great at eating all beef hot dogs and Arnold Palmers.
As long as there's vodka in the Arnold Palmer, I'm in. We'll make it a John Daly.
All right, fellas. Have a good one.
Thank you, Ked. Take care.
Appreciate it.
All right, bye.
Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram. Let's ride together.
What Makes You Smile is brought to you by Dominion National. For anyone that needs dental and vision benefits, I have a one-stop shop for you. TeethKeeperSave.com. TeethKeeperSave.com offers dental and vision benefits for everyone with plans starting under $7 a month. Don't have benefits through your employer? Are you self-employed and need dental and vision benefits? TeethKeeperSave.com has various plans for individuals to choose from. Visit TeethKeeperSave.com today and enroll in minutes.